Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. We hope you are enjoying the fruits of your labor today. A day of rest, though, is probably called for in Washington after the emotional send-off for Senator John McCain this past weekend and ahead of the hearings set to start tomorrow for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. We want to spend some time there today. Kavanaugh is a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C., but also served in the George W. Bush White House. On Friday, word came that more than 100,000 pages of records from that period will not be released, the Trump administration saying they are covered by executive privilege. Meanwhile, Democrats are calling out the person in charge of culling those documents, Bill Burke, a friend of Kavanaugh's, who also represents a number of former White House officials as their lawyer. That includes former White House counsel Don McGahn in the special probe from special counsel Robert Mueller. Democrats say that makes Burke compromised. They say he can't be trusted to choose the Kavanaugh documents. Let's dig into this with Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine, also a fellow at Yale Law School. Emily, no rest for a Supreme Court scholar today. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And you know, there's so much to talk about. Again, we want to spend a few minutes here. Would you agree, though, first of all, that this is one of those somewhat rare transformative appointments? Kavanaugh, a conservative who would replace a more moderate Anthony Kennedy.
Yes, it is a transformative moment for the Supreme Court. Anthony Kennedy was, on many cases, a reliable conservative vote, but there were really important ways in which he broke that mold. On gay marriage, for example, he was the author of the decision that legalized gay marriage throughout the country. He sustained access to abortion, and he narrowed the death penalty. So in these really important areas of law that a lot of people pay attention to and care about, Kennedy did not toe the conservative line, and there's no reason to think that Kavanaugh would take Kennedy's position in cases like that.
Well, there's every reason to think he won't. We'll get into that. But it's also been pointed out by Adam Liptak, your peer in the New York Times, that Kennedy and Chief Justice Roberts were on the opposite sides of 51 closely divided decisions in which Kennedy, as you said, joined with the court's liberals. In addition to rulings going forward, which are at stake in this nomination, are those past rulings also at stake?
Absolutely, because the Supreme Court has the power to change its mind. It's not something the court does lightly, but it happens in all kinds of areas of law. And so when you see those 51 decisions and you imagine them being revisited in a new case, then you imagine them coming out differently. Abortion, presidential power, affirmative action. There is a long list of rulings in which we can expect Kavanaugh to take a different position from Kennedy and thus change the law.
And interestingly, Justice Roberts now becomes the swing vote, which is so interesting. He was seen as such a conservative. But on each side of the court, there are staunch liberals, stauncher conservatives. So Roberts would be the swing vote.
Yes. And that is a sea change of itself. I mean, one way to think about this is that really since the 1950s, there have been members of the Supreme Court who were appointed by one party and drifted in the other direction. Mostly Republican appointees drifted left or served as swing voters. And I think it's fair to say that our whole modern conception of the Supreme Court as a nonpartisan body that does something called law that is different from politics depended on these figures and their kind of outsized role on the court. And we are coming to the end of that era.
Yeah. Sandra Day O'Connor, one who was one of those in the past appointed by Reagan and drifted.
Absolutely.
But take up some of the news from the weekend going into these hearings. These 100,000 documents the White House is withholding. Democrats say the documents they can see have been cherry picked. There's something like 400,000 that have been released. Republicans say the documents left out are irrelevant. Talk a little bit of how interesting this is, because, again, this nominee, you know, this is also rare that you have a nominee who worked in the White House.
Right. So Judge Kavanaugh was the staff secretary to George W. Bush during the Bush presidency. And the Trump White House is asserting executive privilege for, you know, I think a couple hundred thousand documents that Kavanaugh, that passed through Kavanaugh's hands. And so the potential window that we could have had into Kavanaugh's work and into some of the inner workings of the Bush White House is gone. We don't know what lies behind that curtain. And because Republicans are in control of the Senate and the confirmation process, as well as the White House, we are not going to find out.
And people from the Obama administration have been quick to point out to the Washington Post, for instance, that when this same situation occurred for President Obama and his then nominee, Elena Kagan, they did not claim privilege and did not withhold documents.
Right. And so we have this question about openness and transparency. If you have a Supreme Court nominee whose record is part of the executive branch, who worked, you know, in the White House, or in Elena Kagan's case, she was a solicitor general, how much are you going to let the nomination process shine a light into those internal workings of government? The Obama administration had a different answer than the one we are seeing now from the Trump administration.
Let's look at what we might hear about this week. A couple words are going to come up. Originalism is one. Some of Kavanaugh's supporters have been framing him as an originalist, someone interpreting the original meaning of the Constitution. You have an opinion piece coming out later today saying that's not accurate. How so?
Well, Judge Kavanaugh himself has been sort of cautious about claiming the originalist label. He's used much more general ways of talking about his own philosophy. He's talked about history, tradition, judicial restraint, deference to the legislature, competing for primacy of place in interpreting the law. And that's fine, but it's not originalism, because pure originalists believe that you go back to the original meaning of the Constitution when it was written, and that's how you interpret it. Mm-hmm. And originalism has been very useful to conservative judges in claiming that they have this neutral way of interpreting the law. So in a sense, it's surprising to see Kavanaugh back away from it.
Well, but he does call himself a textualist. This has also been applied to Alito, Gorsuch, Chief Justice Roberts. What's that?
Well, that just means that you're reading the text of the law. And, you know, there's a kind of common sense element to this, right? If you're a judge, then, of course, you would start by reading the words of the statute. In fact, all judges do that. So textualism, you know, if it's very wooden, it can lead to results in which legislatures end up having less power, because if they say something ambiguous, then the courts will kind of pull back. But it's not necessarily a conservative or a liberal outcome. And in fact, Justice Kagan has quipped that we're all textualists now. Mm. So textualism doesn't really do the same work of separating conservative jurists from liberal ones.
Yeah. He's going to be asked about presidential power. Given his background, he worked under independent counsel Ken Starr while Starr was investigating the Clinton-Lewinsky affair. At that time, Kavanaugh pushed for harsh questions for Clinton with explicit sexual details. That memo came out. He, though, didn't recommend criminal prosecution of Clinton while in office. In 2009, Kavanaugh wrote an article in the Minnesota Law Review saying that a president should not be criminally prosecuted while in office. So what might questions be? What answers are you looking for about presidential powers?
Well, the senators will ask him why he's had this change of heart. He, as, you know, a lawyer for Ken Starr, was gung-ho about going after President Clinton. But then, as you said, he wrote a law review article in which he said it's debatable whether presidents can be indicted. And in that article, he really sort of put it on Congress to resolve that issue. But Congress has not really resolved it at all. And so then the question will become for the senators, what would you do as a justice? But I think we can expect Kavanaugh to do his best to try to duck that question. That's sort of a classic mode that we've seen from Supreme Court nominees in the last few decades.
And Democrats are pushing for Kavanaugh to recuse himself in any cases involving President Trump. And, you know, there's an ongoing investigation. What are the case they're making? What's the case they're making?
Well, you know, Democrats are saying a president who could be indicted is now in a position to choose the person who could have the deciding vote on that matter. There's something wrong with that picture. But Judge Kavanaugh is not going to agree to recuse himself before he gets to the court. He doesn't need to do that to win confirmation votes, since Republicans control the Senate. And also, Supreme Court justices control the rules for their own recusals. There is no higher body that says, like, oh, no, you really do have to recuse yourself. So this choice will be up to him.
Yeah. Roe v. Wade. Kavanaugh told Maine Senator Susan Collins that she supports abortion rights. And he said that Roe v. Wade was settled law. But a lot of people are looking for different language there. What is that?
Well, settled law is all well and good until it becomes unsettled. The Supreme Court very much has the power to overturn Roe versus Wade. And so to say that something currently is settled law is not to say that it will remain thus in the future.
Because the question would be, do you think it was decided fairly? Is that the language? Is that the
Right. Do you think it was decided correctly? Mm-hmm. Would you uphold it if you were on the bench? And I think, again, we will see Kavanaugh sidestep that question when, in reality, what we know from his record suggests that he would certainly erode access to abortion, if not overturn Roe outright right away.
Boy, Emily, I have so many other questions, but we've run out of time. I can't believe we gave you extra time, too. But this is
the
kind of week it's going to be because there's so much to talk about. Just quickly, 30 seconds. Does it matter? A lot of people say this just doesn't matter. It's going to happen. It's done deal.
It matters a great deal for the shape of American law.
But, I mean,
and that matters
for American society. Do the hearings matter?
Hearings don't matter.
Hearings don't matter. Well, wait, we're going to devote so much time to them this week. Emily
Best. The outcome doesn't matter. The process is important for informing all of us, right?
But we pretty much know what's going to happen. Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there went our whole week. It doesn't matter.